your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
This is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. In this series of interviews, we're exploring the topic, Mystic Order, a Fantasy or a Quality of Being? One of the great things about my travels around the world in Reiki is that I am able to visit different countries, and each of the countries has its own relationship with magic and mysticism. Russia has been one of the most beautiful mystic countries that I've been in. One of the things that's very alive in Russia is their tradition of folk tales and their tradition of connecting a spirit, mysticism, I would say occult, and the everyday world all together. And this is my assumption, and this is what I've gotten anyway from my experiences in the Reiki community. We're here today with Sadhu, who lives in Moscow, and we're going to find out if my assumptions are based on any kind of reality.
I think they are.
So, Sadhu, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, as with everyone, Sadhu, I would really love it if you could share with us how you met Reiki and what it was like for you, because, you know, the other mythology that goes on in lots of other parts of the world is that Russia was sort of closed behind these iron curtains, so to speak, and nothing ever filtered through, and then when they were open, somehow the light of day came. Well, I'm not quite sure it was that dramatic, because I know there was a lot of life behind the Iron Curtain also.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested in also exploring this piece, uh-huh, along with our next piece, which will be about Russian cultures.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, there certainly was life behind Iron Curtain.
Sure. Good. Glad to hear that.
There was life on this other planet. Well, people kept searching for things, but it was like the underground movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy to have met some people who belonged to such an underground movement.
Uh-huh.
What they did was looking for some esoteric books which had been prohibited, and they would read them, translate them into Russian, or find some original books in Russian, type them on a typewriter, because computers didn't exist in those days, and keep at home or give to friends to read, etc. They met at private apartments, had some kind of workshops, like workshops in yoga. Yoga was also a prohibited thing to do. And I was happy to have met two very good friends of mine, who are now my very good friends, and one of them is one of the masters initiated by you, Yelena Znamenska.
Uh-huh.
And she was my first teacher of yoga together with her husband, Vadim.
Uh-huh.
And also my husband belonged to this movement. And I kept practicing yoga, reading books about things, and I was looking for something beyond this physical, very obvious world. And I heard something about prana, and I wanted to experience what it was. They said it was everywhere, all around, but how to feel it, how to touch it. And I was kind of believing it and doubting it. I wondered if things written by those yoga teachers were really true or not. And then I got interested in meditation and was invited to India. And that was the first time I left Russia. And in those days it was pretty difficult. We had to have some private invitation from somebody living in India. One person somehow managed to get to Osho Ashram and asked some Indian people from there to send us invitations. So I was in one of the first groups who came to that ashram on a private invitation from somebody I had never met before and I think will never meet since.
That's amazing. What year was that?
1990.
1990.
And in the plane, I was sitting next to one of the Osho sannyasins flying there with me, who said she had been a physicist and had some very big scientific degree, I forgot which, maybe a PhD or MD, I forgot, exploring cosmos. And since she had met Reiki, she had lost all her interest in all that stuff and had become a healer, healing people, and had healed some very important physicist from cancer. I was just listening with my mouth open, and it took the whole flight to India. I think for 7 hours I had been hearing her stories about her life, about her Reiki path, and she had the first degree of Reiki then.
Wow, that's amazing. And where did she get that, in India?
No, in Germany. Her teacher was Shunyam Yup.
Ah, right.
So, the plan landed in Delhi. We went together to Pune. We stayed in the same room. And then, at one point, I went sightseeing somewhere and was very thirsty. I drank some water, which was supposed to be drinking water, but it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I got home, I was extremely sick, practically dying of diarrhea. And she came, she put her hands on me, she kept her hands on me. I was switched off completely, but it felt as if electricity were running through the whole body. I had been so scared before the session started, scared of dying of diarrhea.
Right.
I had some kind of idea that it had been like, what's the English for that? Cholera. Halia.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Or some unexisting disease that never existed in Europe or in Western countries from which there was no
cure.
And that I could die pretty soon because I had really terrible diarrhea starting all of a sudden. And in 2 hours, everything was fine. And in the same day, in the same evening, that same evening, I was already singing and dancing Sufi dances in the ashram. That's amazing. Just before that happened, I had got terribly sunburned. Again, I was as red as beets, almost, and also had got some kind of a very bad physical state because of having stayed quite long in the sun.
Right, like
Fainting, like a stroke.
Yeah.
And I just fainted in the corridor. She came, she said, "Oh, you love both the sun and the water, don't you? Okay, Reiki." Again, it was very strong experience of something flowing through my body, like electricity, like light. I was again switched off completely. As soon as I woke up, she was thanking the universe in some specific way. And then I said, I need it. That's something I really want to do. Because Osho had gathered people together, saying that he could give them a chance to practice all kinds of techniques, methods of meditation, just for people to find their own path away. I had gone to Sufi dances, to dynamic meditation, to other meditations, maybe all of the days. Something resonated, something didn't resonate that much. When I had that Sufi whirling, I got sick. So, definitely, well. And as soon as I heard about Reiki, it was like, oops, that's mine. And then I said, okay, you teach me this. I also want to do it. She said, I can't teach you, I'm not a Reiki master. I said, I don't care which degree you have. If you can do it, you can teach me how you do it. She said, I can't, I'm not a Reiki master. I said, I don't care. She said, the only thing I could do is to give you Reiki sessions in exchange for your English lessons. So I would teach her English, she would give me a Reiki session, and it lasted for about 3 months.
Wow.
And then she said, my teacher is coming, I need to fly home, my teacher is coming to Russia for the first time. I said, I need to be there. But for some reason I stayed in India. She said, don't worry that your ticket is has the wrong date on it and you need to exchange it, etc. Don't do it, fly home, he will come again. So... that was the first group in taught in Russia, and I was not there. So I am not a student of Shunyam Yup.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very funny thing, because Shunyam Yup didn't, as far as I know, intend or want to go to Russia. But when he got an invitation from an Osho center in Moscow, the Osho person who sent it, her Sanya's name was Jahin. I forgot what it meant in Sanskrit, but Jahin in German means go forward. Go for it.
So, great, wonderful.
So, and for some reason he didn't want to go alone, so he came to Fokker Brink at some kind of a Reiki gathering and
yes.
Invited him as well. But it took time for all the invitations to arrive. It had been such a lot of red tape before he got all the needed documents that he couldn't come together with him. So Shunyam Yup had to come alone, and mm-hmm. then Fokker arrived together with Hans, who wasn't even at that time a Reiki master, but his master candidate.
Uh-huh.
And so when I came back to Moscow, that was the very first group taught by Fokker in Moscow, and in that group I was an interpreter and a student.
Mm-hmm.
And at first Hans wanted to be the interpreter there, so Fokker started speaking Dutch and Hans started translating that into Russian. And then all the people present started crying, Sadhu, Sadhu, come, come. His Russian wasn't that good at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I started interpreting, he immediately started speaking English. I started interpreting, I got all the initiations, I was a student and an interpreter at the same time. I participated in the group and translated, together with Yelena,
uh-huh.
whom I also brought there, so we were in that class together.
Oh, I understand now.
So, and then Hans came to me in the break and said on the next day, you know, I had a dream. I was climbing a mountain with a very heavy rucksack on my shoulders, which was very inconvenient. And then you came and asked if you could take it. I said, well, of course, if you want to take this rucksack, you can have it. You put it on your shoulders and ran forward very quickly in a very light manner, smiling. So it was like this translation work was a little bit too difficult task for him, because that was the moment when he was still learning Russian.
Right.
And they all wanted a native speaker to translate.
Yes, I can imagine.
So,
wow, exciting story. Well, we're going to have to just pause for a moment, and we'll be back after this little break. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have the pleasure of having Sadhu here. She told me her Russian name, which of course I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce.
Veronika Kravtsova.
And she had a very exciting time learning Reiki. And then one of the most interesting things is that these first classes produced an amazing high percentage of people who are still doing Reiki, still very active, and most mm-hmm. of them, if not all of them, are mm-hmm. masters at
yes,
this moment.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, great. Mm. So it's wonderful to hear how all these people came together in Moscow, mm-hmm. yes? Mm-hmm. And was it still illegal to do something like Reiki at that time?
Half legal, because it wasn't really prohibited, but it wasn't official as well.
Uh-huh.
It was a very interesting situation when things were possible, people were doing that, but nothing was possible in the official world,
uh-huh.
officially.
Uh-huh.
So somebody could invite a foreigner to Russia or sending a private invitation,
right.
And this person would come writing that the purpose of his visit or her visit was visiting friends, and stay in private apartments and teach whatever and go back, but it was not official.
Uh-huh.
And it was okay. It was 1990. Also, the situation was that the country was going through a process of great change.
Yes.
And more things could be possible,
mm-hmm.
and people felt it in the air. But still, the old system hadn't completely fallen down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was like it was a strange period. Nothing, all the economy collapsed in some
mm-hmm.
kind of strange way, but people lived the way they had always lived before. Maybe worse, maybe a bit better, but nobody died of hunger.
Right.
At least no one whom I knew. If some visiting Reiki master would enter a shop, it would be totally empty of all goods. One of the big supermarkets, very big, built in one of the new built areas of Moscow, or
mm-hmm.
suburbs, was totally empty. When I was opening the door at that time, wanting to buy maybe some milk or some bread to eat or whatever, somebody going out of it said, don't come in, you'll go inside in vain. There are no goods. At all. I said, at all? He said, yes. I wanted to make sure. I came in. I saw a shop assistant sleeping behind the counter. Some spices like pepper, salt, another kind of pepper. And that was all. All the other shelves were totally empty. And I started dancing there. I think it was like one of the Sufi dances or something that I was learning in some of the groups of Osho sannyasins.
Uh-huh.
It was so strange. I thought, well, why not make exhibition of paintings here? Well, such a waste of space.
Right.
But when people visiting Russia would come as guests, the whole room would be full of food. People would bring that from home, something that they were growing in their near their summer houses, in near their dachas, some vegetables, fruit brought from somewhere, something canned and kept for some special guests, for VIP people. Everything was there. It looked like paradise or abundance.
Uh-huh.
And Fokker couldn't figure out how on earth all these goods appeared like by magic.
Right.
When they were not available anywhere and all the shops had totally empty shelves. You couldn't uh-huh. buy them in shops.
Well, that's a mystery.
Yeah.
But let's get to the mystery.
Yes.
So I remember coming and realizing that when I ask somebody a story, the sort of usual thing, when they would tell me everything that had led up to the story,
mm-hmm.
they would tell me everything that they had imagined as a result,
mm-hmm.
and then they would tell me their story.
Uh-huh.
So conversations were very, very long, and I realized that, when I started to read Russian folk mm-hmm. stories and so on, that this was quite a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that they, when people would speak about Reiki or they would try to explain their experiences, it felt like it matched some of the experiences that were in the Russian folklore, I would say, or maybe in the mm-hmm. mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, was that accurate, or maybe it was just my putting things, pieces together and coming out with an odd assembly of possibilities?
You know, yes and no, because what you are talking about right now belongs not only to Russian culture, it belongs to all cultures. If you look at Japanese folklore, at Japanese fairy tales, at French fairy tales, at whatever, at English fairy tales and myths and legends, you will see that there is a lot of such stuff
mm-hmm.
In all cultures. And Jung called that archetypal.
Uh-huh.
So it's some archetypal experience.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Or the experience of meeting with the archetype.
Uh-huh.
And, there is something, well, to put it from this scientific Jungian language into mundane language, into our common language, I could say that there is something in the cultures of all people which reflects something very deep hidden in the minds or in the subconsciousness of all human beings. And all these images of fairy tales, myths, legends are more or less the same. They have different names. Maybe the plot is different, but there are common issues. It has to do with mystic experience, to my mind. It does, but by mystic experience, I would mean the experience of direct meeting with the divine, the direct the ability to see the divine directly, to experience it,
mm-hmm.
like I see you right now, like
mm-hmm.
Like I see this room
mm-hmm.
where we are, and it's the ability to see clearly something that other people are blind of.
Uh-huh.
And to see it directly. The people who are mystics, they don't need anybody in between them and the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
How do you know if you're seeing the divine or you're just what some people might call crazy?
Well, I believe I'm not crazy after.
But it's a real it's an interesting experience, because sometimes I try to describe mystic experience and somebody says, oh, that's just fantasy, and I'm interested in how one actually knows.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had it for many, many, many years because I needed to have criteria for myself that could allow me to discriminate between the actual mystic experience and some pathological process in the mind that some people call craziness. Psychiatrists have names for that.
Yes, exactly.
And it's, well, I had a certain myth for myself, or a certain story. We have our so-called normal state of consciousness, our normal conscious mind, and we call it everyday mind, or normal consciousness, or whatever term we can call it. And it's an ability to know who we are, where we are, what is happening, and to be aware of the time, like if somebody asks what day is it today, one may think for a moment but then give the appropriate answer.
Right.
Like being aware of the time, of the place, of what's going on, of one's personality, and that's the criteria for clear consciousness. Of course, we have limitations. We see something and we do not see something else. We can make mistakes. That's pretty human. But it's more or less a clear thing. And then from this state of consciousness, there are kinds of doors that lead to other states of consciousness. And some are the doors to staircases that lead higher, to some higher states of consciousness, which are altered, but bigger or more advanced or higher than the average. And there are staircases leading down. The underground world, let's put it like this, is something which is much better known than the upper world. The underground world is the world between the normal state of consciousness and the sleep. It can be it can be trance states of all kinds, states when we are so agitated or mad that we lose our mind, states when we are kind of beginning to fall asleep, like in between two realities.
Right.
And some other states of that are typical of diseases described by psychiatrists, when people are no more aware really clearly of who they are, what they are doing, where they are, and what time it is.
And, Sadhu, it's time for a station break.
Oh, good.
So we're going to take a little break now. We'll be back with Sadhu, and I can't wait. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Awakened Media for a Transforming World. Seventh Wave Network.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an
analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing, broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm with Sadhu, who is from Moscow, Russia, and she was just explaining to us these different levels of states of consciousness. So, Sadhu, we're at the states with stairway. No,
there's the staircase going down.
Staircases going down, and then there are staircases going up.
Going up, yeah.
Yes.
There are other states which where the so-called normal state of consciousness is not lost. So people are aware of who they are, where they are, what time it is. They don't say it's the 12th century and I'm the queen of England or something else.
Right.
They know who they are, what they are doing, what's going on, everything. This world is not collapsing. But they can see that it's what we usually see is not all that exists. There is something beyond which is as real as the world we live in. If I go to my own experience of such states, they are typical not only of the Reiki practice. People can get to such a state by all kinds of means or spontaneously.
Right.
And there are people who try and describe them. There are lots of stuff written about it in psychological literature, especially transpersonal psychology. It's all devoted to such things, to such phenomena. And also in Buddhist writings, in writings about yoga, in the Vedas, in all kinds of holy scriptures. So we can look for such information in many, many places. And the way you get there is not important. It's important that you are there. Yes, of course, I practice Reiki, and it's my life path, and I love it. I love this practice. And it's not the only practice that leads there, as far as I know. If I think about a mystical experience which I get through Reiki, with the help of Reiki practice.
Yes.
The result is not different than when I practice something else or get there spontaneously. But the moments which come to my mind in the first place are mostly when I keep my hands on someone. Giving Reiki to someone, and then all of a sudden I feel that I am light, that the source of this energy, the flow of this energy, myself and that other person whom I am treating is really just energy, just a flow of light and love and peace. And we are this river, and there is no distance between me and that other person, me and the source. And it's not that some God knows what energy is flowing through me, using me as a channel and doing whatever. It is like suddenly becoming aware of who I am really, and who are other people, and what really exists. And it's like coming home to who I am, like remembering myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's nothing that Reiki is actually giving you,
yes,
in the sense of that you don't have it. It's
mm-hmm.
more that it unveils,
exactly, right.
It unveils your true being.
Right. That's what I believe.
Uh-huh.
It's like really being who I am, seeing the other people the way they are,
mm-hmm.
and just being that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like sudden, some sudden experience when I suddenly become aware of something that has always been there, but I haven't paid attention to it.
Uh-huh.
It's something like this.
Uh-huh.
And maybe the strongest experience, mystical experience, when I was giving Reiki, it was like not so long ago I was giving myself a self-treatment. I was keeping hands on myself. And I was with my eyes closed. And I was in a state which was not the downstairs state, but it was suddenly a more awakened and conscious state than average. And in my eyes I just saw pure light, very, very bright. And I was just looking at it in amazement. And I saw some kind of clouds that were dissolving.
Uh-huh.
Like if you look at the blue sky and see some very, very light clouds which are turning into nothing. And then I had a thought in my mind, the only thought, that yes, something that doesn't allow us to see who we are really is kind of melting, and now you can see it. It was something that I would call the great light of the universe. We can give it various names, God or whatever, the power that creates everything, mm-hmm. and is in everything, Brahman, which is everything according to the Vedas, whatever. The light of Buddha.
Uh-huh. Would you say that Reiki is this light?
Yes,
also?
I think so. We can just give it this name as well.
Uh-huh.
I'm a person who thinks that we are all looking at the same thing, but dealing with it in different ways and giving it different names. But
uh-huh.
the essence is absolutely the same.
Uh-huh.
I feel no difference.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that this was me, because I was really what I was really experiencing and seeing was really me. And at the same time, it was that God in the universe, a great light of the universe, or whatever you can call it.
Uh-huh.
And there was no difference.
Uh-huh.
Of course, before that, I had been reading books saying that you are neither distant nor distinct from God, or things like that. And had been trying to think in this direction, but that was actual experience. And I was in a state of such bliss, peace, and light, and it was so intense. And then for some reason I didn't go deeper with that, or didn't stay longer in that. I kind of got out of it, opened my eyes, and for some time I was absolutely thoughtless, speechless, just being without any words. Maybe one of the states about which Eckhart Tolle writes in
uh-huh.
his books.
Uh-huh.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And I was just that. My mind stopped. I thought, wow, at last. And then the first thought came and I was out of it completely. But such moments come more and more often, and
right.
stay longer, really. And I experience that by practicing Reiki, I come closer and closer to something which we can call the mystery of who we are, who the world is, who God is,
uh-huh.
experiencing it directly. And our practice just opens this door or gate for us.
Uh-huh.
Maybe gives us a chance to experience and to re-experience it. Maybe for me it's the right way to attune to something.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe this room is full of very beautiful music, but to my mind, in my world, there is silence. Because I cannot just directly hear radio waves. But if we have a radio set which is attuned in a certain way, then these radio waves can be turned into the sound waves which my ears can hear. So when I practice Reiki, I attune myself as if I were the instrument in the hands of God, or as if I were a radio set. And something from beyond can then become my human kindness, my human love, the warmth of my hands, my presence, my compassion, my actions in this world.
Uh-huh. So do you feel like then that you and this moment become a manifestation of what some people might call God?
Absolutely.
Or
so.
You become a manifestation of the divine?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And that for you is a mystic experience.
Absolutely. And that's what Reiki is about for me. For me, it's not just like massage or a healing, just a healing method.
Uh-huh.
It's much more than that. And if it had been just a healing method, it wouldn't have interested me. I got interested in it as a spiritual path, a path to the divine, as a spiritual discipline and as a mystical practice, like one, like Sufi practices, like some Buddhist meditations. Uh-huh. And it just happened to be something that suited me more. As a compassionate person, I wanted to serve, and this practice gives me a very good chance to serve. To serve the heaven being its instrument and manifesting its love, to serve people who come close to me and who are near, to serve the earth, to serve various beings, to serve myself.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Well, believe it or not, it's time for another station break. We're going to go on. We have one more session with Sadhu, lucky us, and we'll be back in just a few moments. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept. Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, the Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the law of attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Sadhu from Moscow, Russia, and she's been describing in the last segment her, it's been her description of a mystic experience, which has been fascinating for me because her language is so precise, and I've really been enjoying listening. And I'm just wondering, Sadhu, would you say that things, that phenomena like out-of-body experiences or having pre-knowledge of things, are those also part of a mystic experience?
I believe so. At least something that is very, very close or leads to it directly. Mystic experience for me is contacting the divine.
Right.
And I believe that there are some functions in us which I can call intuition. Some people say that it's the voice of God in us, or the voice of our higher self, and we can hear it. We must not mix it up with other voices, and we must learn to have the courage to follow and see what happens.
Oh, well, this brings me to an interesting point. So what about the people who are channels, who have an entity come down through them? And I remember listening to a lecture by Ram Dass back in the 1990s, where everybody was channeling somebody. And he said, just remember that people who don't have bodies are not necessarily wise. So I thought that was really clever, and it gave me heart, because there were some channels that I thought, I could turn this channel off right now. But I'm just wondering, would you say that that's a part of the divine, or would you say that that's something that is a manifestation of our own psychological sensory perception?
You know, I can answer you with the help of another kind of metaphor. One needs to discriminate, to learn how to discriminate.
Right.
Between... well, on one hand, everything in us is divine. If we are divine, we are this.
Right.
But on some level, we have forgotten.
Right.
So let me call it the voices of the forgotten. And the voice of the real.
Okay, I like this. Continue.
Yeah.
Okay, the voices of the forgotten. Tell me about these.
Well, when some people work with pendulums, when some people try to go inside and hear something like, God, tell me what to do, or what are your plans about me, or what do you want? Sometimes the first thing that people hear are the voices of their fears, of their illusions, of their desires. Of something which is, well, on the one hand, pretty human, and maybe even pretty animal in us. Well, that's also us. And this is a perfect way to contact all these things, but if you contact them in order to heal some wounds and to bring light into this and work on that, that's perfect. That's a wonderful method of therapy. But... one needs to really work all this stuff through, I believe, in order to be able to be kind of purified enough or stable enough to really hear the voice of our higher self among all these voices. And it's not always that when people go deeply inside themselves, they hear what we would call the divine or the higher self.
Right. So how can one tell whether you're listening to the voice of the forgotten, which I love, I'm going to actually use that again, I'm sure, or the voice of the divine?
You know, there are some criteria. I don't know if they are the criteria for you or for anyone else. I know people for whom they are criteria. When I contact the divine... I contact certain qualities of the divine, which to me are love, wisdom, light, very deep divine peace, bliss. It's very close to the possibility of really real deep understanding, compassion, forgiveness, when you see that there is nothing to forgive. That someone is really innocent, it had just been your illusion or fantasy about this person. Or this person couldn't have acted otherwise. There is no reason to not to forgive. You know?
Right.
And it has to do with some kind of view on things. if these things are there, if what I do helps me to achieve all these things and manifest them, then I'm going the right path.
Uh-huh.
Because when the divine speaks, it speaks without words. It's soundless. It's just the state of all these things that I have enumerated. A very deep love, compassion, understanding, light, wisdom, power, and bliss. And it's very powerful. Mm. If I have it, if it's there, it's there. If it's not there, well, I immediately feel something is wrong. It's like a different color. Oh, well, how can you discriminate between green and red? It's just green and red.
Right.
And some people are kind of Daltonics. They can't discriminate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's a pity.
Mm-hmm. So, so I just want to get one more question in here. So, if when we are practicing Reiki or some other practice, and we are open to these experiences of the divine or a mystic experience, then would you say that we have any kind of goal? You know, there is this word floating around, enlightenment. So mm-hmm. I'm just wondering about your feeling of, is mm-hmm. this a goal? Do you think mm-hmm. that this is something that can be achieved? Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Okay, a good question.
Yeah.
Also, I love it.
Yeah.
I believe that oneness with God is something that can be experienced, and it's not as difficult as many people believe. We can talk of various levels of oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe real oneness with God, well, is something that we really are, but to see it, one needs to really go through some kind of journey or path, undertake some journey.
Mm-hmm.
And at some level of maturity, we are that, and we see that.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do to reach this level of maturity? Well, I believe we need to practice something.
Mm-hmm.
To make it our life path and practice. And it's just a device that helps us to grow quicker.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as natural as for a child to grow into an adolescent and then to a young adult and then to an adult and then grow older. And it's also a very natural process for us to go through, and maybe it takes lives and lives and or just quite a long experience of this life.
Mm-hmm.
What does Reiki do, to my mind? I once saw a mountain. On the southern side of it was brightly lit by the sun, and the snow melted there. And there was already, well, in the places where it had melted, there was already grass and flowers blossoming, while the northern side was still covered with snow.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Reiki is like the sunshine. The rays of the sun, and in the places where the sun shines, things grow better because there are better conditions for growth. So to my mind, this practice creates better conditions for our growth and natural maturation. So my inner flowers of possibilities and gifts have more well, better conditions to grow. Of course, if the sun is not there, the snow also melts because summer comes.
Mm-hmm.
But it melts in its time, and then different plants grow there. And maybe if they are the same plants, they are not as thick, as flourishing, as blossoming as on the southern side.
Mm-hmm.
When I give myself daily Reiki treatments, I know that I am giving the sunshine to my inner garden, so that all my inner gifts and talents could grow.
Mm-hmm.
Better.
Interesting.
So, and I believe that practicing Reiki, like any other spiritual practice, people can achieve in their time something that can be called oneness. Oneness with oneself, inner integrity, oneness with others, oneness with the nature, oneness with God. See God directly in all things, in all beings,
mm-hmm.
and look at everybody and everything like at brothers and sisters.
That's wonderful. Well, it gives me great inspiration to keep practicing, for sure. And I know that in my mind, as I practice Reiki, that I experience longer and longer moments of bliss, and that's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
That's the same experience with me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Sidhu, for this
wonderful
interview. And I hope listeners out there that you are inspired. I certainly am. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back next week with another wonderful interview.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.